Several weeks we've been looking at miracles, right, that Jesus performed, and we've been looking at expecting miracles. We've been praying and believing for healings, right? Well, when something like that happens, we want to know, right? So David, I found out, he didn't tell me, but I found out that God did something in his life, and so I asked him to share with that with you today.
Well, mine's kind of a testimony of a healing. I'll begin at the beginning of the year. I lift weights quite a bit, and my chest routine was 225, three sets of 10. And I was getting some discomfort in my shoulder. You know, I kind of fight through it, kind of thought, well, it's just a part of getting old, you know. And, you know, I usually could go back and still complete my routine. Well, a few months later, I wake up, and I've got this excruciating pain in my shoulder, and it ran all the way down to my elbow. And I went into the gym that night, and I couldn't even lift the bar off the deal. It hurt so bad, and that went on for a few months, and I couldn't hardly sleep. I mean, it was affecting my job and everything. And then finally, I come into church one Sunday morning, and I decided to go up, and I was going to give it to God because I didn't know what else to do. I wasn't going to go to the doctor if I didn't have to. So I was going to go just give it to him. Brother Joe prayed for me. I went home that night, or that day actually, and I was sitting in the chair watching TV, and it just, all of a sudden, my shoulder started kind of feeling a little better than it normally did. And that went on for a while. I mean, it was about 2 months that I let that go, and I was just tired of it. It was just causing my life stress and pain and stuff. So once that started, it just, from then on, it just has felt better. And that was probably a month ago, and I can lift my arm above. I'm almost to where I was when I was lifting before, and I'll never underestimate the healing of God, that's for sure.
Amen. If you give him an opportunity, he can do things, right? So we've been talking about that, and, you know, John 14, Jesus said, I tell you the truth, anyone who believes in me will do same works that I have done and even greater works. And so that's why we started looking at the miracles that Jesus had performed on throughout his lifetime. And we started in Matthew chapter 8, and we moved through the miracles of Matthew chapter 8, and we looked at the rooftop faith where guys cut a hole in the roof and to let their friend in front of Jesus. And we looked at the story of Jairus' daughter, and last week we talked about the shedding of the beggar's cloak and relying on Jesus. And this week we're gonna look at another passage that's shared in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. And in Matthew chapter 12, verse 9, it says, then Jesus went out to the synagogue where when he noticed a man with a deformed hand, the Pharisees asked Jesus, does the law permit a person to work by healing on the Sabbath? They were hoping that he would say yes so they could bring charges against him. And he answered, if you have a sheep that fall into a well on the Sabbath, wouldn't you work to pull it out? Of course you would. And how much more valuable is a person than a sheep? Yes, the law permits a person to do good on the Sabbath. Then he said to the man, hold out your hand. So the man held out his hand, and it was restored just like the other one. Then the Pharisees called a meeting to plot how to kill Jesus, but Jesus knew what they were planning, so he left the area, and many people followed him, and he healed all the sick among them. You know, we've talked about how Jesus and how he does these things on the Sabbath, and how it makes the Pharisees just so angry. But we've also talked about how Matthew is just a cut and dry guy, right? He tells what it is. He says, this is what happened, but no details. Guy had a withered hand and stretched out. It was healed. Good. We're going to go on. And most of the time, typically in the last few weeks, we've looked at Mark's his story on the thing, because Mark is a little bit more descriptive. But in this particular story, it wasn't Mark that was the descriptive one. It was Luke. Luke had more description on this miracle, maybe because he was the physician and he noticed some things about it. But either way, he was more descriptive. In Luke chapter 6, it tells the same story. In verse 6, it says, on another Sabbath day, a man with a deformed right hand was in the synagogue while Jesus was teaching. The teachers of religious law and the Pharisees watched Jesus closely. If he healed the man's hand, they planned to accuse him of working on the Sabbath. But Jesus knew their thoughts, and he said to the man with the deformed hand, "Come and stand in front of everyone." So the man came and came forward, and then Jesus said to the critics, "I have a question for you. Does the law permit good deeds on the Sabbath, or is it a day for doing evil? Is this a day to save life or destroy life?" He looked around at them, and one by one, and then he said to the man, "Hold out your hand." So the man held out his hand, and it was restored. At this, the enemies of Jesus were wild with rage and began to discuss what to do with him. So Luke tells us that this is his right hand that was deformed. It was his right hand that was withered. And so I started thinking about that. On verse 6 it says, a man with a deformed right hand was in the synagogue. If you're left-handed, I want you to raise your hand. If you're left-handed, oh, like five of you. We think with our right side of our brain, just so everyone else in here knows. Left-handed people think with the right side of their brain. But we'll move on. If you're right-handed, raise your hand. See, most everyone is right-handed. And if you are a left-handed person, if you ask them, a left-handed person will tell you that this world is made for right-handed people. It's made for right-handed people. It's not made for left-handed people. I'm left-handed. I learned how to play baseball right-handed because my brothers were right-handed and I got their hand-me-down gloves. You just got to figure it out, right? You just got to figure it out. If you're left-handed, you got to figure it out. There are common things that most people think nothing about, but left-handed people think about. A person with right hand, they don't have any difficulty with these things, but left-handed people do. Do you know why you can't read a left-handed person's writing? Because they don't make very many left-handed desks, and it doesn't matter if there's 10 left-handed desks, all the left-handed desks will be taken by right-handed people. So frustrating. Scissors are made for right-handed people. No, you can use either hand. No, they are made for right-handed people. When you cut, the way that you squeeze the scissors, if you are left-handed, you have to really think about it to make it cut right. Doors are made for right-handed people. Can openers are made for right-handed people. If you are left-handed, you know the pain of trying to open a can with a can opener. It is not made for left-handed people. This guy, having his right hand unusable, was an incredible inconvenience. It also was a status thing. The right hand is a symbol, was and is a symbol of strength and power. In biblical culture, the right hand was associated with the person's strength, ability, and authority. In Exodus 15, verse 6, it says, "Your right hand, O Lord, is glorious in power. Your right hand, O Lord, smashes the enemies." In Psalms 18, 35, it says, "You have given me your shield of victory. Your right hand supports me. Your help has made me great." To have a withered or deformed right hand meant loss of strength, productivity, and dignity in the eyes of the community. Most people, as I said, are right-handed, so the right hand symbolizes a person's capacity to work and provide. This man's disability would have hindered his livelihood, his ability to function fully in society. It hindered everything that he did. And Jesus could restore the right hand that would mean restoring his ability to work, provide, and live with dignity. Without the use of his right hand, I'm sure there were things that he couldn't do. There were jobs that you need both hands for. It was to his disadvantage working. If he did find a job, he was likely paid a lower wage than a person doing the same job with two hands. The right hand symbolized strength, but it also symbolizes fellowship and agreement. Galatians 2:9 says, "James, Cephas, and John were esteemed as pillars gave me and Barnabas," this is Paul speaking, "me and Barnabas the right hand of fellowship when they recognized the grace given to me. They agreed that we should go to the Gentiles and they too, the circumcised. Having a deformed right hand could be seen as a barrier in full participation in community life. Jesus healing his hand would restore not just his physical ability, but also his inclusion in social and spiritual wholeness. Biblically, the right hand is a place of honor and favor. When a father would place their hand to bless their child, they would place their right hand on the oldest child. But you see, when Isaac blessed, he switched hands. Israel blessed Joseph's sons, he switched hands. Sorry. Psalm 16:11 says, at your right hand are pleasures forever. Matthew 25:33 says, Jesus places the sheep, the righteous people, at the right hand. This man's deformity may have symbolized being cut off from the favor, but Jesus' healing could demonstrate that God's kingdom restores honor and blessing. It wasn't just the physical, it wasn't just this man's physical handicap that needed healed. It wasn't just his hand that day. Can you imagine the things that were probably said to him over the years that he had to carry around? He couldn't do something. He couldn't do certain things. And I'm sure that he was made fun of or just told, you can't do that. How many times was he looked down upon because of the disability? How many times was he told he was worthless or useless? How many times did someone close to him push him to the side because of his hand? He was labeled because of his withered hand. Many of us have things in our lives that are like that hand, that people have looked down on, that people have called out maybe, that people have pointed out. And we've carried it around. It's things that we've struggled with. Maybe it's an addiction. Maybe it's a family issue. Maybe it's a sickness. Maybe it's a trust issue. Maybe it's, no matter what it is that we've carried around, it becomes the withered hand that we've just learned to live with. But in reality, God has so much more for us. Luke 6:7 says, the teachers of the religious law, though they were, and the Pharisees, they watched Jesus closely. If he healed the man's hand, they planned to accuse him of working on the Sabbath. The Pharisees had come to church not to worship, but to criticize. They came to try to trap Jesus. They came to see if the preacher says or does something wrong so they can tell everyone on Facebook about it, or so they could gossip out at the hair place or down at Fun Days and tell them everything that happened. Everything that he did wrong. They didn't come to help. They didn't come to pray. They didn't come to worship. They came to do nothing. Neutrality is not an option. Not helping is the same as harming. They didn't come to help this man. They were more focused on catching Jesus in a mistake than celebrating a potential miracle. And their sticking point was Exodus 20:8 when it says, remember to observe the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. You have 6 days each week for your ordinary work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath day of rest, dedicated to the Lord your God. On that day, no one in your household may do any work. This includes you, your sons, your daughters, your male and female servants, your livestock, and any foreigners living among you. By the time Jesus came along, that was Moses. But by the time Jesus came along, the religious leaders had labeled 39 categories of work. You couldn't carry anything. You couldn't tie or untie something. You couldn't knead bread. You couldn't walk. You couldn't go anywhere. You couldn't make mud. So I guess it couldn't rain on the Sabbath. Right now, I'd take rain any day. In their mind, healing was medical work. So since this guy's hand wasn't life-threatening, he couldn't be healed on the Sabbath. If Jesus heals this guy, if he heals their hand, they all saw the hand. They have no intentions of helping this man. They've all seen him. And their plan was, if Jesus heals this man, we're going to accuse him of working on the Sabbath. The Pharisee's suspicion was actually an indirect confession of Jesus' power. They knew that he could. They probably knew that he would. And so they said, we're going to get him today. We're going to trap him. Today's the day. He's going to heal that guy that we've been walking past and not thought another thing about. And today he's going to heal him, and we're going to call him out. We're going to tell everybody on Facebook and everyone down at the corner store and everything. The new gas station that's not even open, we're going to have signs plastered in there. Verse 8 says, but Jesus knew their thoughts. And he said to the man with the deformed hand, come and stand in front of everyone. So the man came forward, and then Jesus said to his critics, I have a question for you. Does the law permit good deeds on the Sabbath? Or is it a day for evil? Is this a day to save life or destroy life? Jesus knew their heart. Before they said a word, he knows our thoughts, and he sees beyond our words to our motives. Jesus could have healed the man quietly, but instead he brought him into the spotlight. The miracle became a teaching moment for everyone in the synagogue. Sometimes God allows our weakness to be publicly shown so that his power can be displayed publicly. Jesus asked, does the law permit good deeds on the Sabbath or evil? To save a life or destroy it? He strips away their legalism and gets to the heart of God's law. The Sabbath was always meant for life, mercy, and restoration. By not doing good when we can, we're actually allowing evil to continue. The Pharisees chose accusation and hardness of heart. Jesus chose healing and compassion. Verse 10 says, he looked around at them, and one by one, he said to the man, after he looks at them one by one, then he says to the man, hold out your hands. So the man held out his hand, and it was restored. At this, the enemies of Jesus were wild with rage and began to discuss what to do with him. I get this picture of him, right? In this moment, he's called the guy forward, and all the Pharisees are waiting, right? They're ready to jump. They're ready to pounce. And he just looks each of them in the eye. And he kind of mean mugs them, you know. He's giving them that look. Yeah, come on. What are you going to say? What are you going to do? What are you really thinking? And he looks each and every one of them in the eyes. And he's looking at them. And in my mind, I'm thinking, he's giving them that chance to change their opinion. He's giving them that chance like a parent when they look at their kid when they're doing something wrong and they're across the room. And he's giving them a chance. He wasn't intimidated by them. He wasn't intimidated by the Pharisees' judgment. And he made sure that they knew it by looking each one of them in the eye. He met their accusations with authority and boldness. He confronted unbelief head on. He tells the guy, hold out your hand. There was no ritual, no elaborate act, no touch, no work, just obedience to his word. The man stretched out his hand that was withered, and God restored it. I was thinking about this all week long. I've been thinking about this guy. And I've been thinking about that withered hand and how it was deformed and how he couldn't do anything with it. And in that moment that he stretched it out and it became whole, I've thought about what was going through his mind in that moment. The excitement, the thankfulness, the appreciation. Stretch out your hand. He didn't work. There was no work involved. Jesus just spoke the word. The man did something that wasn't work. He opened his hand. sometimes the only thing standing between us and a breakthrough is a simple act of obedience. And instead of rejoicing at the miracle that had just happened, it says that the Pharisees were wild with rage. Their hearts were so hardened that a life being restored provoked anger and not worship. I've never understood how something good can be taking place and people still be angry about it. But I've seen it time and time again. That spirit that the Pharisees were carrying is still alive and well. God will begin to do something in the church and God will begin to move and things will begin to happen. And the enemy rears his head with people that are angry about something that has nothing to do with what is going on. But that's their sticking point. They had lost compassion. And when you lose compassion, you'll resent miracles. You'll look at people that receive miracles and you'll say, well, why didn't I receive a miracle? And you'll be mad at that person for being blessed. Opposition often intensifies when God's power shows up. But his works can't be stopped. People will resent what God restores in your life. They'll resent it. When God blesses you and when God does something in your life that's out of the ordinary, people will resent it. But you can't let their anger stop your obedience. Jesus still restores that's withered. He still restores those withered hands. When your right hand, your strength, your gift, your ability, the things that God has given you feel withered, when things in your life, when certain aspects or areas of your life feel withered, when your health is withered, when your family relationships are withered, when your finances are withered, He can restore those things. What often is seen as a permanent loss, Jesus sees as an opportunity to reveal His restoring power. Jesus is still in the business of restoration. The question this morning is, will you stretch out what's withered and let Him make you whole? Will you stretch out what's withered in your life? In your family, and let Him make it whole. I ask everyone that would to stand to your feet this morning. Lord, I just thank You today. I thank you for defying odds, Jesus. I thank You for healing even when we don't expect it, but I thank You even more for healing when we ask specifically for it. And Lord, I pray that today in this house, the things that have been withered in people's lives, whether it be relationship, whether it be a physical ailment in their body, whether it be their finances, whether it be something totally different, whatever it is that's withered in their life, Lord, I pray that today that they're able to stretch it out to You and that You're able to restore. Lord, we just thank You and we praise You. We thank You and we praise You today. Thank You. We praise You. Maybe you're in this place and you say, you know what? I have a withered area in my life. have a withered area in my life. Maybe you are battling a physical ailment. Maybe it's something else. Maybe there's a family strain. Maybe there's a relationship that's just withered. And you need God to move in that situation. I want to invite you to come. Maybe it's a financial thing. Maybe it's something I haven't mentioned. Maybe you've been dealing with an addiction that you need God's help to get rid of. I want to invite you to come. Maybe you become like the Pharisees. And you've seen something happen and you've gotten upset about it and you don't know why. You've seen a miracle and you're upset and you don't know why. I want to pray with you. I want to believe with you. Regardless of what the situation, regardless of what the issue is, regardless of whatever you feel like is withered, I ask you to come so that we can pray and believe with you that God will restore it. Lord, I pray that today that you begin to move. I pray that today that you begin to touch. God, I pray for the ones that responded and the ones that are still at their seats that need to be here, God, I pray that you begin to restore, that you begin to restore that which has been withered, God. Whether it's relational, whether it's spiritual, whether it's physical, whether it's financial, whether it's emotional, whatever it is, Lord, I pray that you begin to restore that which has been withered, God. Lord, we just thank you. We praise you today. If you feel led to come and pray around this altar, feel free to do so. If you feel led to come and pray for the ones that are here, feel free to do so.